Most Wanted podcasts on BBC Sounds. Where is the missing crypto queen's billionaire scammer?
It starts to get very scary, very, very fast.
How did gangster's drug baron finally get caught?
He was taken completely unawares.
Why were Burn Wild's environmentalists labelled eco-terrorists?
For a long time, they were getting away with it, but that wouldn't last.
Uncover a new case
while the dog drags you out for a walk.
Listen to True Crime Podcasts on BBC Sounds.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
It's July 2007, and the great and the good of Formula One are gathered at Silverstone for the biggest race in the UK motorsport calendar, the British Grand Prix. And this year's even bigger than usual.
So you've got the on-track battle going on. You've got this seismic story unfolding around it. And this was kind of like the first weekend where the two situations had fully collided. So you can imagine the atmosphere at Silverstone within the paddock was electric. Suddenly, everybody in Formula One was aware that these events of historical importance were unfolding. You know, everyone was like rubbing their hands with glee almost. You know, it's like, right, here we go. What's going to happen next?
I still can't believe it happened. The extent of it, the way it was done.
It was like a bomb that exploded within the team.
I've never heard of anything like that at that level. That's crazy.
Would you do anything to win? You probably would.
Everyone's so arrogant, they thought they were untouchable.
This has turned into an all-out brawl, and it's happening in front of the entire world.
Formula One really looked into the abyss in 2007.
One of the biggest stories in the history of Formula One. But it will haunt the people involved for as long as they live.
I'm Pete Tong. From BBC Sounds and BBC Radio 5 Live, this is Sport's Strangest Crimes, Spygate. Chapter 3, It All Goes Wrong for Ron. Silverstone, where it all began. The circuit that hosted the very first race in the Formula One World Championship. That was in 1950, just 3 years after it was decommissioned as an RAF base. Nestled in leafy green Middle England, Silverstone, that snaking superfast circuit, has hosted more championship races than any other besides Monaco and Monza. It might not evoke the same city glamour as those tracks, but that doesn't stop the drivers from loving it. Yes, driving F1 cars is fun at most places, but Silverstone is something else. Michael Schumacher described it as, quite simply, the home of motorsport. The British Grand Prix is also a home race for many of the teams. In 2007, 7 of the 11 competing teams were based in the UK. And this year, it's not just a homecoming for them. It's also the first home race for a certain Lewis Hamilton. Ticket sales are through the roof. It's been over 10 years since a Brit won the championship, and Lewis, driving for British team McLaren, is sitting at the top of the standings. To say the fans are pumped is an understatement. But there's trouble brewing for team principal Ron Dennis, who's received some unwelcome news.
Unfortunately for McLaren, that also coincided with this bombshell from Italy that Ferrari were claiming that McLaren had this information, 780 pages worth documentation of every detail, not just of the latest car, but how they worked, their budgets, everything. It's the Ferrari Formula One team's working manual, if there was such a thing. I mean, a massive thing. 3.5 kilos it weighed. It was just huge. That they had this. That McLaren, I mean, this was unheard of.
Ron needs to act fast for some damage control. He immediately puts out a statement announcing that the team is suspending the person involved and that they won't be commenting any further. Nobody is named. At this stage, it's only those at the very top who know it's Mike Coughlan. It's a calm, measured response, much like Ron himself. But this statement is the first anyone has heard of the story. And it's like a bolt from the blue for the Formula One community. Spying in squeaky clean McLaren, this is one story that he can't keep under wraps. To add insult to injury, Ron's been looking forward to this week for a while because it's the debut of the team's new motorhome. Sarah, a motorhome, not exactly the glamorous image of F1 we've come to know.
Yeah, that's right, Pete. I mean, we have to actually redefine the word motorhome here. We're not talking about the type of motorhome you strap on your car and then take up to Skegness. These are actually large structures where the teams eat, the drivers have their own rooms to chill out. And as you'd expect in Formula One, it's a place to do business. So the teams are showing off to their sponsors. You might have a cheeky meeting that you don't want anyone to see, that kind of thing. The team's motorhomes are lined up opposite the garages in what's known as the paddock. And I should also probably mention that they only are taken for the European leg of the season. So for the flyaway races, you have to downgrade. You don't get your big posh motorhome.
Okay, and McLaren have got a new one to show off, right?
Yeah, McLaren have decided to upgrade their motorhome this year. This one is a three-storey giant and it needs 12 trucks to transport it. It has to be taken down after the race and rebuilt in full at the next track. I've actually been to this motorhome and you can get lost there. It's that big. So there's a lot of logistics involved. Ferrari actually go on to nickname it the Black Death, which obviously Ron would probably not approve of because the official title that he gives to this new baby is the Brand Centre.
That's a bit boring.
It's on brand, Pete. It's on brand.
Okay.
That's what it is.
Ron's determined to put this spying business behind him and he's invited the press down for a grand reveal. He mills around the Brand Centre, making sure everything's in its place. But out of the corner of his eye, he spots something that definitely doesn't look right tonight and asks service staff to rush bottles of wine out of sight and behind the bar. It turns out the Pinot Noir that they're serving is from New Zealand's Spy Valley. Awkward. Still, Ron's ready to wow journalists with all the impressive specs of his new superstructure. The thing is,
nobody wants to talk about it. Everybody wants to talk about what's going on. So Ron Dennis is trying to welcome everybody to the new Brand Centre. And we all want to talk about the obvious thing. What on earth's going on?
For Formula One insiders, this news of spying has come out of nowhere. And it's clear to Morris that Ron hasn't had the chance to process it either.
He obviously looked quite pale, very set expression, thinking of choosing his words very carefully, gave a monologue about how important racing was to him. And we didn't doubt that at all. And how the team meant everything to him and couldn't believe this had happened. It's not true. And was in shock. He was clearly in shock, trying to deal with it with as professional a face as he could. But he was being asked a lot of questions to which he didn't really have all the answers because you got the impression that he'd been caught off guard, that he didn't actually know about this. And this is a man who put great store about having his team or a family. We're all in this together. We've got a wonderful management structure. Everything works as it should. We're professional. And Ron Dennis seemed to be wrong-footed. He was struggling to piece it together in his own mind.
Right, let's see if we can piece it together then. Mike Coughlan and Nigel Stepney. Sarah, a little help here, please.
Okay, Pete, so these aren't the headline figures that everyone knows, but F1 is a small world, as we've mentioned before, and if you're an F1 insider, then you'll definitely know who they are. If you're part of the travelling crew that goes to all the races, you see the same faces at airports and hotels and tracks, etc. So Mike and Nigel will be fairly familiar faces to those people. Mike and Nigel are old colleagues. They first met working at Lotus in the 1980s. At this point, Nigel is a mechanic and Mike is working on the design side. There's also a pretty famous face emerging there at the time, Ayrton Senna, and they both end up working on his car in one way or another. The two men go on to work together at Benetton, and then in 1994, Nigel gets his big break, if you like, as Ferrari chief mechanic. Coughlan is also involved with Ferrari at this point, but he's working in a design group that's based in the UK, not in Italy.
So when we get to 2007, Coughlan is the chief designer at McLaren, and Nigel, as we've heard before, is adjusting to a new era at Ferrari. Andrew Benson, BBC's chief F1 writer, has met both of them. On Coughlan,
he's a tall guy with sort of curly blonde hair receding. A guy who used to work with him once described him to me as like an overenthusiastic mad Labrador. I hadn't put it into those words myself, but when he said it, I thought, yes, that's absolutely right.
A mad Labrador. All right, so we couldn't resist asking him, what kind of dog would Nigel have been?
Like the Alsatian, the guard dog, the Doberman maybe. He was quite an abrasive character, Nigel Stepney. He was also a big guy with curly hair, dark brown curly hair, and quite an intimidating character. Could be very dismissive. And in the role that he had at Ferrari, that was probably pretty useful for him. You know, he had to try to whip the race team into shape.
Nigel's respected in F1 circles for doing exactly that. He was part of the dream team that turned Ferrari into a winning machine. But up to this point, his biggest claim to fame is Schumacher running over his foot in a botched pit stop. Ouch. Andrea Cremonesi, F1 editor for Italian sports paper La Gazzetta dello Sport, remembers Nigel was a crucial part of the team, who'd embraced the local culture. He could speak the language fluently and had been living there for years.
Nigel was one of the pillars of the Ferrari. He was integrated in the team. He talked Italian too. He was living there. He was a nice guy. He's a funny guy. We were a good relationship with him, really. He was a very smart guy. Yeah? He was like a fox, you know, you can say. He's the right person in that period, in the right environment.
Well-respected, nice guy, an over-enthusiastic Labrador. Not exactly the words you'd usually choose to describe spies and cheats. Or perhaps exactly the kinds of people who wouldn't arouse suspicion.
Well, exactly. Here's Maurice Hamilton to explain how he responded when he heard it was Mike Coughlan who was involved.
He was a very quiet, studious, solid engineer, very good reputation. There's no shady business with him at all. And he's not the sort of guy who would be involved in anything devious. You know, he just was a straightforward, dedicated engineer. There are some guys you'd think, yeah, he would do that. You know, he's a rascal. He would go and do that. But no, that aspect of it didn't fit either.
No, but let's not forget, F1 engineers are super swats. Who wouldn't like to have a nosy at a bit of contraband car tech?
Well, indeed. And they need to be single-minded to an extreme, Pete. Could that provide some clues to the nature of the crime?
When I say Mike Coughlan was an engineer, I think it's summed up by the fact that he would be so engrossed in his work, and engineers tend to think only about that and not see the rest of the outside world in some ways, that he should send his wife to a photocopy shop with this 780 pages to get it put on a disc. You think, what are you thinking of? Why are you doing that? That doesn't make a lot of sense. But if you're so into what you do and you think, yeah, let's get down on a disc and don't think about the implications, it tells you a lot. I think if it was somebody devious, they wouldn't do that. They would find some other way of doing it. So I think it summed him up. I think it summed up the fact that he was just very naive.
Okay, so Coughlan isn't exactly a supervillain. So why does he have this information? What's the motive?
There were rumours that he's frustrated at work, he wants more responsibility, a more prestigious job title. But then there's also the competitive environment that Coughlan was working in.
The pressure on engineers and car designers and technical chiefs in Formula One teams is immense, because that car is expected to win. And you could only be talking about maybe on, say, a 3.5 mile lap, a tenth of a second. But it's a tenth of a second you're slow. You've got to find out the reason for that. And you would be thinking night and day about what is it? What have I got to do? Where are we losing out? What can we change? What can we improve? Would you do anything to win? You probably would.
Okay, what about Nigel Stepney then? Why is he leaking information from his own team?
Well, we've already heard that Nigel was feeling a bit frustrated at Ferrari. And there's also another theory that he was frustrated by what he saw as Ferrari's lax attitude to the rules. You might remember we told you about the Ferrari floor, which was found to be illegal earlier in the season. Nigel had been leaking information about this to Mike, so you could argue he was a whistleblower.
Okay, that sounds kind of reasonable.
Yes, but on the other hand, Nigel had personal problems with the team. He could have been out for revenge. Back in 2006, he saw the post-Schumacher era reshuffle as a chance for promotion into his dream job as technical director for the team he loved.
But Ferrari have a different opinion.
Italian F1 journalist Andrea Cremonesi.
He was not an engineer, so I think that Ferrari simply was looking for an engineer for that role, to be the technical director of the team. To be honest, I think that Nigel was too ambitious in that period. It's what we heard from a Ferrari.
So Ferrari's saying Nigel was ambitious above his station. Meanwhile, Nigel wasn't happy about not getting the promotion he thought was owed to him, and he wasn't shy about it. He aired his grievances to the F1 media, saying he was unhappy and wanted to take a year out, and would even consider joining a new team. That would have been a big no-no for Ferrari, something of a cardinal sin.
Yes, Enzo Ferrari would not have approved. For him, no employee was bigger than the team, and that included superstar drivers. Just ask Alain Prost. He joined Ferrari as a three-time world champion, and it's gone down in F1 folklore that he was sacked by the team when he dared to compare his Ferrari F1 car to a truck.
Okay, got you. But back to Nigel, who is now actively shopping around for jobs. Morris Hamilton thinks he even witnessed him on one occasion.
I was flying to the Spanish Grand Prix at Barcelona. I was at Gatwick Airport. I went into the lounge and there was Nigel Stepney. And he had a jacket and collar and tie on, which is very unusual. And I thought, hello, he's not been down on the beach. No, he's not here for a holiday. He's been having an interview somewhere.
At this point, it seems that Nigel wants to get out of Ferrari and as quickly as he can. But he still has a 12-month contract, which Ferrari wants him to see out. He's moved to a new role in which he no longer has to travel to the races. So are the teams trying to give in to some of Nigel's demands? He said he wants to be at home more with his girlfriend and new baby. Or were they trying to sideline him? It's all a bit of an unknown, but it's definitely the start of a relationship breakdown between Nigel and Ferrari.
A disgruntled employee, an offended employer. When that strange white powder is found in the Ferrari garage, it's no wonder that Nigel is suspect number one. But was he guilty? Would he be that stupid? Ferrari is sure of it. Their evidence, some CCTV footage of Nigel lurking around the factory, although that's never been released, and a curious incident where Nigel had his trousers taken to an Italian police station, his pocket searched for traces of the white powder. Others thought Ferrari might be up to something themselves.
It could be a move from somebody else to make him in trouble inside of the team. Maybe somebody that he wants to take his place. Big question mark. Big question mark.
Morris Hamilton couldn't believe it either.
It didn't ring true on a number of counts. One was, if you were Nigel Stepney, why would you want to do something as blatant as that? The guy was a mechanic, had been a mechanic, was a technical man. If he wanted to nobble a car, he would choose something far more sophisticated than the equivalent of washing powder in the field, for goodness sake. And it pointed towards the fact that somebody was trying to finger Nigel Stepney and trying to put blame on him or find an excuse to get rid of him. You know, that's all I could think.
Guilty or not, Nigel is hung out to dry. First, he's put on gardening leave while Ferrari investigates. He leaves Italy on what he says is a planned holiday. But that doesn't stop him from issuing a statement calling the allegations a dirty tricks campaign. Look, 2007 has not been Nigel's year. He's gone from eyeing the promotion of his career to looking for a new job altogether. And who better to look with than an old friend and maybe a partner in crime?
Stepney believed that he was due for a promotion at Ferrari and he didn't get the promotion he expected. Coughlin was in a position at McLaren where he felt he should have more responsibility than was being afforded to him.
The two men think their chances will be better together.
And between them, they joined forces to try to get a better job. But they approached Honda, who were running a team at the time, looking for jobs, basically. They were trying to set themselves up as effectively the team boss or technical director of some senior role within Honda, which they felt they were entitled to, given their experience and, as they saw it, their expertise.
A month before Spygate breaks, both men meet with a Honda representative at Heathrow Airport. Nothing comes of it. But it's not their only meeting. In fact, they'd been spotted together earlier in the year too, in Barcelona, where at the end of April, most of the teams convene to test the latest tech updates on their cars. But it's nowhere near the track that they're spotted.
So the weekend before, I went down to the marina to have a weekend with my partner, Sylvie.
Mike Gascoigne, our technical whiz from last time, decided to go early for a romantic weekend on his beloved yacht.
And on the Saturday morning, walked around the corner. There, sitting in a restaurant, was Mike Coughlan and Nigel Stepney. I mean, he was in his McLaren travel gear. And we walked past and Sylvie actually said, oh, doesn't one of those blokes work for Ferrari and one for McLaren? And I said, yeah, I said, but I think they're old mates from Lotus days or something. So, you know, may just be down here having, like we are, having a weekend on the boat and a few beers before the test, you know. So we walked past and actually walked back and sat down in the same restaurant, said hello to them. And they actually scuttled off and didn't think anything of it at all.
Except this wasn't just a catch-up between friends, because we now know they were sharing confidential information. And when the story breaks, Mike Gascoigne connects the dots.
And of course, when this broke as I was driving in, I suddenly thought, well, that was it. That was when they met and this happened. So yeah, the world's biggest sporting spy scandal, and I walked around the corner and watched it.
Back at Silverstone in July, the impact of their meeting is being felt far and wide.
Disbelief is the only word. We were completely shocked because in Formula One, in motorsport in general, there is spying to a degree, but it's at an amateurish level. But nothing on this level before, and I'd like to think that there won't be again. It was hard to digest. It was so hard for us to believe that it had happened to this extent and that it should be McLaren of all teams. They're so squeaky clean. Ron Dennis was just so proud and everything's done properly more than any other team. And for this to happen to him made it doubly unbelievable.
Bad for Ron, but good for journalists.
From a newspaper man's point of view, I mean, it's manna from heaven, except you had to be careful what you wrote because of the legal implications and because this was a very strong accusation being made by Ferrari. And you could only speculate. You could only say, well, this is what Ferrari say, and this is what Ron Dennis says, and nothing's adding up. It's just unbelievable, incredible.
So like any good journalist,
I obviously was thinking, I really want to find Nigel Stepney, as did everybody else in Formula One, including the Ferrari people, because he'd gone to ground. They got rid of him. He'd gone to ground. Nobody knew where he was. And he was the one man that we wanted to talk to.
All right, Sarah, this is your area. So tell me how they went about tracking Nigel Stepney down.
Well, Pete, a plan is hatched the day before the race at Silverstone.
There was two of my fellow reporters, Jane Nottage, who was with the Sunday Times, and David Tremaine, who was with the Sunday Independent, and me covering for the Observer. Jane knew Nigel better than I did, and she'd managed to make contact with him. And it was agreed that we would have a conversation, the three of us, with him Saturday morning at Silverstone.
Nigel asked the three journalists to convene at the media centre first thing in the morning to make contact.
So we went in before anybody else arrived, very early in the morning, it was about 8 o'clock, I think. Went up to the media centre, nobody else there, went into the phone room. And Jane phoned Nigel, wherever he was in Spain, I think. And he knew we were going to report it in the following day's Sunday papers. So it was giving him a voice, if you like.
They must have made for a really funny sight. I've spent lots of time in media centres around the world and they're kind of these big, white, blank office spaces designed so that the journalists can spread out. You know, it's an international sport. There are, you know, hundreds of journalists that come, but they kind of keep themselves to themselves. So three top journalists huddled over one phone in the corner would have really stuck out like a sore thumb.
Good job they were in so early.
Exactly. Anyway, they get to the really important stuff with Nigel, what his role was in the Ferrari information found at Mike Coughlan's house.
During the course of that conversation, on three separate occasions, we asked him in various ways, did you pass the information as is claimed to McLaren? And three separate occasions, he said no. So you couldn't do any more than, apart from calling him a liar, you could say, right, we have to take it at face value.
Okay, so Nigel is adamant that he had nothing to do with passing the Ferrari info onto McLaren. And that's not all, is it, Sarah?
No, Pete. During that meeting, Morris says Nigel seemed fearful, explaining why he'd gone to ground.
He went into some of the background about how he'd been hounded by Ferrari. He and his girlfriend had to get out of the country. The situation had not been very nice. And it was very unpleasant, basically. And the whole background of how they'd claimed that he'd tried to add something to the fuel in one of the cars and tried to nobble one of the cars and all the rest of it. He covered all of that. But we really couldn't get much further as to, you know, what had happened regarding Spygate.
A dead end, if you will. Meanwhile, on the track, Hamilton is on a one-way street to becoming a British racing legend. He's delighted 80,000 fans by taking pole position in qualifying, and he's leading the Drivers' Championship. As Morris types up and files his story, the world goes to bed, high on Lewis mania. On Sunday morning, when Stepney's version of events is published in the British press, Morris is summoned by Luca Colliani, Ferrari's press officer.
And about 11 o'clock on Sunday morning, I got a call to present myself to the Ferrari press office. And I knew as soon as I walked in that there was going to be trouble. I walked in and I knew Luca very well. And we worked together for a long time. And he had the Observer spread out in front of him on the desk. And he's stabbing his finger at it, going, lies, 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 all across the paper. Lies, lies, lies.
Tell us what you really think, Luca. Anyway, back on the grid. After his sizzling pole position, Lewis Hamilton can't convert it to the win, and the Ferrari is on another level. Raikkonen is the main man again, and he chalks up his second win in a row. And the fierce rivalry between the McLaren teammates burns on. Fernando Alonso has just beaten Lewis Hamilton on the track at Silverstone, but it's Hamilton who is leading the Drivers' Championship, for now. The action of the weekend might be over, but off the track, things are hotting up. Rumours are swirling at McLaren about the identity of the alleged spy, and the day after Silverstone, they get an answer. Ferrari's case has been listed at the High Court in London, and the man they're up against, one Mike Coughlan, McLaren's chief designer. The news sends shockwaves through the team. Mechanic Mark Priestley.
I think for most of us in the team, we heard about it at the same time that the public heard about it. So when the story began to break in the news, you know, we read these articles the same as everybody else. We had no real inside knowledge at that point and that very early stage. I think the reaction from most people was that, no, it can't be right. That can't be true. You know, it's just one of these little stories that the tabloids throw together. There was a big rivalry that had been brewing for years over between McLaren and Ferrari. So it's just another one of those little stories. And I think most of us brushed it aside. Of course, we talked about it. You know, everyone says, have you seen this story? And I think the general reaction was, well, yeah, I've seen it, but, you know, can't be true, can it?
Well, I'm afraid, Mark, it can. Because in exchange for the British court case going no further, the Coughlans provide affidavits, confidential accounts, of exactly how they came upon these 780 pages of Ferrari documents. And they are juicy, full of ammunition for Ferrari. While the journalists are having a field day in the tabloids over who stole the data, the guard dogs of Formula One, the FIA, have picked up the scent. And they're more concerned by another question. What does this data breach mean for the championship? Could McLaren have used it to their advantage? Before the week is up, McLaren's worst-case scenario is starting to take shape. The team is charged by the FIA and an investigation is launched.
The message from Ron was that there's nothing to worry about. We're fully corresponding with them. We are giving them everything they want. because we haven't done anything wrong. The story, you know, is something out of nothing. And at that stage, it was all about one guy. It was about Mike Coughlan, who had gone rogue. So we think it's going to blow over. We think the investigation is going to prove that, and we'll all be fine, and we'll just carry on.
Keeping calm and carrying on isn't really going to be an option for McLaren, because they've been called to Paris, where the FIA wants to pass judgment. And an FIA judgment is enough to bring an entire team down, not just one guy. It can bring down its star drivers, Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso. It can bring down the 2007 season. Next time on Spygate.
He was very fair, very polite, quite a kind of gentleman, aristocrat as it were. But Max was the iron fist in the velvet glove. You didn't cross him lightly, and he was very persistent.
But unfortunately, Ron, I got the impression that his vocabulary didn't really stretch to that, and Max Mosley could outthink Ron Dennis very easily.
Lo and behold, when we opened them, had a bundle of cash inside, and I remember being absolutely flabbergasted when I opened it. And I was amazed. I was, you know, the question, of course, is what's this for?
Spygate is a Chalk and Blade production for the BBC. The producers are Matt Nielsen and Rosie Stopher. Sound design is by Alex Port-Felix, and the showrunner is Sarah Stollarts.
Later on in the Checker Flag podcast, we'll bring you all the reaction as well to what has been a very entertaining Grand Prix.
Get analysis and reaction after each Grand Prix from the expert Five Live Formula One team with the Checkered Flag podcast.
What a race that was!
Listen on BBC Sounds.